Welcome to People Place Power. I'm Trisha Mukherjee. Today, we're excited to bring you another Activist Chat, a series where we have candid conversations with activists we admire about why they do what they do. This week, I sat down with Senator Nikhil Saval. Senator Saval represents several neighborhoods of Philadelphia on the Pennsylvania State Senate. He's worn many hats, including author, editor, and community organizer, before he was elected as the first Asian American ward leader in Philadelphia. Senator Saval, thank you so much for being with me today and doing this interview. So excited to be talking to you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for inviting me to be part of this.
So, I read that you grew up in an immigrant family in LA and that your parents owned a pizza store while you were there. I was wondering if you could tell me about your memories from childhood growing up there and how that influenced what you're doing today.
Sure. So, yes, it's true. My parents owned a franchise of a deep dish pizza restaurant. It was called Numero Uno. It was in Santa Monica. And
the restaurant was this punctual setting of just being extremely busy at various times and then extremely slow at various times. And the slow periods were also connected to a sense of anxiety, I would say. You know, it was nice when the restaurant was busy. It was kind of scary, or just it was a damper, I would say, on my parents' mood when it was slow. Because actually, when it was slow, that just meant you were making less money, right? And that money was connected to our livelihood. And I kind of understood that that's what we needed. We needed the restaurant to be busy so that everything else could happen in our lives. I did have a middle class upbringing. I wouldn't necessarily say that we lacked for many things, but I wouldn't necessarily also say that we were well off or, you know, in a position of stability all the time. So the other thing I felt from the restaurant is that it was extremely hard work. My parents worked constantly. I was always with the workers at the restaurant who were overwhelmingly from El Salvador, but I would say from immigrant backgrounds generally. And they had left the country, I believe, in the early 80s or like late 70s as unrest started to take place in El Salvador. As people may know, the United States then intervened in El Salvador against the potentially going to be a left-wing government in El Salvador. I mean, I didn't know any of this at the time, but what I did know is that many of the workers were undocumented and my parents were able to secure status for them, because for my parents, there was just this understanding that everyone was just an immigrant of any kind. And there's people across the citizenship spectrum, and everyone deserves a right to arrive and a right to move and a right to stay. I mean, I wouldn't have used this language at the time, but yeah. But it's totally coherent, yeah. You know, with what my experience was.
So you got into Columbia, and at that point, I read that you wanted to be a novelist and a writer. So what were your aspirations at that point in life? Were they at all political?
They weren't. I had no real sense of politics meant and or what a political life would involve. Mm-hmm. I was a Democrat. My parents came to the United States in the 1970s. Right. Their first experience of politics was Watergate, the Watergate trials. And so their inclinations, but also their experience of what, you know, the Republican Party was, just led them to the Democratic Party. Right. And even among Democrats, really liberal Democrats. And I inherited that, but with no sense of active partisanship, no sense of real passion for politics, I would say. And the thing that started to chip away at that was that first few weeks in college. I arrived in New York in 2001. The September 11th attacks took place, and I had a dorm at Columbia where I was on the 13th floor. Mm-hmm. Columbia's quite far from the World Trade Center, but nonetheless, from one of the windows, you could see the World Trade Center towers, because you could just see straight down to Lower Manhattan. Right. And what I remember from that day is that we were running from the common room where the TV was to the window and back to the common room. And then as we saw the towers start to collapse on TV, we ran to the window where we could see them collapse in real life. Mm-hmm. And all of that, I think, was just an attempt to grapple with what was happening. And I don't know that I was able to for many weeks or months. I had a lot of suppressed grief around it. And, you know, the other thing that happened is that whatever grief I had was converted to a kind of bewilderment and then eventual anger around the rush to war. And I had no real understanding of what that meant, except that I was against it. I knew that I just felt it was precipitous. I remember thinking, saying in a class a few days afterwards, like, because there was already a war kind of footing and belligerence in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I said, what if we don't go to war? What if we just rebuild? And no one responded to it. I remember there was just kind of general silence or embarrassment around this idea. You know, the fact that we were suddenly going to war, you know, not just in Afghanistan, which I think was wrong, but I at least have an understanding of why that happened. And then subsequently Iraq, you know, which was, I thought, completely wrong. I mean, I think both wars were wrong, but one was so clearly so that it was just a complete shock that a number of people would just find this the right thing to do.
Right.
And those things started to necessarily to involve me in at least a conception of being political. Mm. And I, you know, I marched against the Republican convention in 2004, mm-hmm. which was in New York City.
Right.
And that was, I think, more or less the first big mass protest I took part in.
Yeah.
Or one that I took part in consciously. I'd sort of been dragged to one thing or the other, but this one I intentionally went and was just really driven to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did it feel like to be in that protest?
It felt at once exciting, I would say, in the sense that there were so many of us. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful day. I remember like a beautiful summer New York day. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like there were just, you know, I believe afterwards there were several hundred thousand of us.
Yeah.
And like, we didn't really, that we were going to do this thing, we were going to demonstrate against the Republican Party, and, you know, and in fact, many Democrats had mm-hmm. supported the Iraq War, including the candidate at the time, John Kerry,
right.
and, or the nominee. But we focused on the Republican Party, and frankly, they just didn't care. So I felt energized, and I also felt something was wrong. We didn't have the institutional strength or the ability to actually change the picture mm-hmm. in Washington or in the country at large.
And then you got involved in labor unions, and I read a little bit about your work with Unite Here. I also read that you tried to start a union at your publishing job.
Yeah, there's no real way to describe this without saying I tried to start a union, but in fact, I did so little and accomplished so little in that regard, so I hesitate to say that I really did. I mean, I just would have meetings and after work with my colleagues and just get them to try to think about forming a union at our workplace.
Yeah.
There was only one other union in book publishing, which was that I knew of, which was at HarperCollins, and it was fairly weak, but I thought we needed to all unionize because people were getting fired and without cause, I thought, and we didn't earn enough, and I wanted more control over our work. In a way, I just thought, what is the vehicle that we can use to fix this? And I was reading a lot in the history of the left and the 60s and things like that. And I thought, oh, like a union, that's what we need.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how to do that. I didn't know who to contact. I didn't know where to go. I just had no, so I made very little progress in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But that experience made me think, I have to learn this. Like, I want to understand what it means to be part of the labor movement.
Yeah.
What does it mean to actually organize?
Right.
And in a way, you know, because I continued to go to anti-war marches after college, which were smaller and smaller. And I was like, I can't just keep marching. I can't just, I don't know what to do or how to do the thing that I want to do to actually like build something.
Mm.
And so I went to graduate school 2 years after I graduated college. That was always my plan. And I wrote to Unite Here because I was reading labor notes. Like, I was reading a labor magazine, basically. I wrote to them, the local in San Francisco, and I said, can I volunteer for you? And they said, sure. And then there was a kind of dark union office where I would spend a few days a week, and I learned to be a boycott organizer. Right. You know, and we had some successes, we had some failures. It was, but one thing I had to do is just confront people in a way I never had, pull people together, confront my own, you know, unwillingness to, you know, I wanted to be liked by other people, but you can't do that in that job. And just seeing a union that was Black and brown, you know, Latinx, Asian American, Black, just like pulling together and having power in a very expensive city was and a livelihood and jobs that could help them sustain their families. You know, that was really amazing.
Yeah. And do you feel like you've been able to pull that into your career as a politician, in terms of the coalition building and all those things that you said you wanted when you were in the publishing industry and, you know, reporting on gentrification and then doing this union work? I think before Trump, and also especially because of Trump, a lot of people have lost faith in the political system and its ability to do that.
So what I felt like I want to do as an elected official, you know, a lot of elected officials talk about their independence and their ability to judge a particular situation and just use their own mind and just kind of think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's never really true. I think people are always kind of responding to their fears or their, or, you know, coalitions that they actually have but won't talk about. Mm-hmm. So for example, Senators Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin right now, they like to portray themselves as just independent thinkers. They're different. But actually, they're just responding to their own constituencies, the oil and gas industry, or who, you know, whoever it happens to be, the pharmaceutical industry. And so movement elected officials also respond to their constituencies, but they do, they're responding to their, to organized social movements who don't have money, really. You know, they just have people. And so they have, in a way, that's much more powerful.
And how do you make sure to stay in tune with the movements that you're representing?
So we set up actual formal structures to stay in touch. And so in particular, around the issues that we really care about, I mean, we care about a lot of issues, but the issues where we have a kind of set of, where we're working constantly on them. So namely, housing, the climate crisis, or a Green New Deal, and what we call mass liberation, not mass incarceration, so criminal justice reform. We have roundtables that consist of our movement allies, advocates, you know, sometimes movement lawyers, and we meet every, we meet bi-monthly and talk about particular issues, and they advise or, you know, provide responses to them. And so, for example, when I have to take a vote on a criminal justice bill, I never just do it on my own. I run those bills by our mass liberation working group, and they advise on it, right? It's just, and it's a regular check, because, you know, it's possible that I might just look at a bill and be like, oh, I don't know, I mean, I know it increases penalties for certain crimes, but that's a terrible crime and we should do so. And to have this group that just is constantly there to check that impulse, and to, and again, to say, this is a risky vote for you to take, but we will, that's what you're there to do, right? And we're here for you, like that, and we're with you, and you're with us, right? I mean, like, you're, and that's how we do it. So we have, and we, in our office, we have two dedicated organizers, a community organizer and a, who keeps in touch with social movements, and a liaison with organized labor. So that also is how we kind of institutionalize social movement participation in our work.
And lastly, for our listeners, do you have any recommendations on how they can be more politically or civically engaged?
I think it's just good to to join or be part of organizations. Like you won't always find the right fit. I mean, I think I joined a number of different kind of socialist organizations when I was in grad school. I obviously was part of the anti-war movement to some degree. I never really found a home until I found a home in the labor movement. Mm-hmm. And even after that, I didn't fully stay. I ended up, I got involved in the Bernie Sanders campaign and then founded an organization with the volunteers that and staff that were here.
Right.
So it doesn't always exist for you. And sometimes you do have to found it. But organizational life is the best tool, I think. Mm-hmm. It just... And then having mentor and an organization needs other organizations that it can be in, everyone goes through a lot of the same stuff. Like you do need, how do you raise money? How do you have a membership base? How do you run an issue campaign? How do you run someone for office? How do you, keep that person accountable when they're in office? Like people have gone through it. So also just find out what other groups have done that you admire.
Right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. It was really a pleasure.
To support Senator Saval's vision of workers' rights and equality, check out Unite Here. Unite Here is a union that supports workers, especially hospitality workers, and it's the organization Senator Saval worked with, one of the organizations that he credits for inspiring him to do the work that he's doing today. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.